Welcome back to Truck Tech, everyone. This week, we are going to get back into that subject that really is getting a lot of attention right now on the private level as well as public, and that is infrastructure for charging electric vehicles and also filling hydrogen ones. The biggest project out there that we know of in the U.S. anyway is north of $650 million. It's called Green Lane. It is a joint venture of Daimler Truck North America and Next Energy, as well as BlackRock. All three have some expertise and some solid credentials in those areas. And we're happy to have with us for today's show, Patrick McDonald King, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Green Lane, appointed last September to this role as the joint venture began to get its legs under it. Patrick, welcome to Truck Tech.
Alan, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think we'll have an interesting discussion. You know, we did get a chance to preview some of this one-on-one, and that's always helpful. Your background, you have most recently, of course, a background with EV Connect. You want to give us a little bit of your story before we get to what we're here to talk about today?
Sure. So I worked as president of EV Connect for the last 5 years before joining Green Lane. And at EV Connect, we scaled the company from about 2,500 charging stations to about 20,000, becoming the third or fourth largest charging network across North America. EV Connect was an interesting business that it also we were acquired by Schneider Electric in February of 2022. And we also expanded it to Europe, Australia, and New Zealand and Canada. EV Connect was actually named by Time Magazine as one of the most influential companies in 2022 as well. So that was sort of a very nice feather in our cap to end off before the acquisition. It was acquired by Schneider Electric. They were actually utilizing it for the backbone of their e-mobility strategy in both North America as well as Europe. And so migrated the assets over and integrated the two businesses, and EV Connect well on its way.
Yeah. I don't know whether it kept its brand. I think it looks like it did from what I saw on the internet, that the brand survived that. And, you know, it's so interesting because we have to be very careful when we talk about Schneider here, because Schneider, which of course has a lot of Daimler business, is a very large for-hire trucking outfit. We talk about them a lot. We talk a lot less about Schneider Electric, but maybe someday we'll get in with them. I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about sort of the origins of this. You know, there was a similar joint venture created in Europe. I cannot for the moment remember its
Mylan's
name, but Mylan, thank you. And this one, when it came up, seemed to be, of course, you're always impressed, or I am anyway, by how big the number is in terms of what the investment's going to be. Tell me a little bit, sort of the 30,000-foot level, about Green Lane and about what you want to get done.
Well, our vision is to roll out a nationwide network of high-speed charging and hydrogen fueling stations to support a green transitions for tomorrow's fleet, mostly focused on medium and heavy-duty trucks. We are going to be doing some light-duty and passenger, but what we're really focused on is sort of rolling out a combination of greenfield sites where we actually acquire real estate and develop it, as well as acquire bolt-on locations where we're actually partnering with existing locations like travel centers or truck stop operators, and modernizing their facilities with charging and hydrogen fueling, as well as a smaller version of that, which we're doing with convenience stores, as well as dealerships. So that's sort of our strategy of go-to-market. A lot of what we're doing in the locations and the corridors that we choose to light up is really determined by a data-driven strategy. Daimler has obviously got 40%+ of the market share. So they have a lot of data for class 6, class 8 trucks, a lot of telematics data that gives us a real snapshot of the industry as a whole. So it allows us to go and focus on the right corridors, the right locations, and the right routes to ensure that we're electrifying these for the transition for fleet and freight and logistic companies. So beyond that, we also have a relationship with Uber Freight, where we're actually taking their data and overlaying it as well. So that really gives us a view of the market, probably 60%+, as well as access to sort of the smaller and medium-sized freight logistics companies.
Well, I think what has been public is that, you know, the strategy is West Coast, East Coast, and Texas, sort of a smile pattern. That's what we used to call it in the car business, you know, sort of the smile states.
Yeah.
Obviously, California has a pretty good-sized lead on this, both in terms of incentives as well as really regulations. I guess we call that the carrot and the stick approach that's going to require, obviously truck makers to make the trucks and fleets to buy them. I mean, you know, they made the market, quite honestly. Now, I realize that's been delayed slightly, but at this point, you've got quite a few folks on the public-private side, starting up in doing what you're doing, maybe not with the kind of announced investment. I mean, certainly some big numbers behind some of these companies, whether it's TerraWatt or, YDV comes to mind, others that are, engaged. And I think you said, though, that, come on in, everybody, there's plenty of room in here right now.
Yeah, well, I think, there's sort of a combination of companies out there. A lot of companies are doing depot charging, which is sort of behind the fence. GreenLane is 100% focused on public charging and creating the public infrastructure to allow folks to get from point A to point B. A lot of the other guys that are getting into the space, as some of the competitors that you'd mentioned, I think it's great. I think is at the end of the day, is there's so much infrastructure that needs to be deployed in order to make this a reality and for folks to actually have a national network of locations they can actually charge their vehicles, that it's going to take a lot of money and it's going to take both public and private. And on top of that, it's going to take a lot of players to get into the space to make this a reality and help freight and logistic companies electrify.
And it's interesting that, some of your bigger real estate developers, warehouse companies, whether it's Prologis or, CBRE and those folks are all sort of, jumping in because they see opportunity, not just for existing facilities to energize those, maybe their warehouses or whatever, but to do, true, buy land, acquire land and then build out charging. It is interesting though. We've always talked about, I hate this term chicken and the egg, but the honest truth is you can have all the trucks you want. And Daimler was one of the first to say, I think it was actually, the head of mobility who said, look, I can get you a truck in 2 months, but it might take you 5 years to get power for it. That's not really too far off in some cases, is it?
No, there's a significant challenge is getting power to sites. And it is probably one of the biggest challenges that a lot of these companies that are developers that are out trying to do this, because some of the sites we've looked at is it could take up to 2-3 years for us to get power to the type of power that we're looking for. I mean, we're obviously looking at a lot of power and getting into megawatt charging in the next couple of years. It's going to be a big demand. So that's it's pretty important to have the right partnerships and the right utility relationships in order to make sure that you can get it to where it needs to be.
Well, and you've got partners who in addition to the work that you've done, at EV Connect on the passenger vehicle side, you've got a lot of this. You know who to call. I mean, your figurative Rolodex, which is an old term, I know, but your phone probably has a lot of names and numbers in it of people to call to help get this started. But in some cases, there's public utility commissions and others that need to weigh in and maybe some changes that need to be made at that level. To open up the grid a little bit. We used to talk. I once worked at General Motors, and of course, we were early with the battery for the Chevy Volt. And at one time, the range was not very good. And then we realized you could use a little bit more of the battery. And I think I've learned recently that it's possible to maybe use more of the grid than we are because of the way we have always structured, the way it's always been done, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's lots of opportunities to use more of the grid. I think it's where the grid is actually deployed and accessible is probably the bigger challenge. You've also got different challenges by different utility companies across the country, right? Companies in California are really focused on how to stop wildfires, right? So they're actually going underground with cables and so forth. Other areas of the country, Florida, Texas, they have their own all challenges that they have to go through. So you've got a different sort of challenge by utility companies across the country. It's nice to have NextEra on board as a partner in the business. They understand the landscape and they understand exactly what it takes, whether it's building a microgrid on site, close to our site, or be able to utilize and navigate that utility landscape. And EV Connect was a large part of our business too, as we were sort of certified and approved for about 80 different utility programs across the country.
Let's talk for a minute about microgrids and stationary power, because we saw recently, I believe it was, and I mentioned them already, TerraWatt is probably going to use some level of stationary power to tide them over until they can be fully electrified in a setting. I believe in the LA area, they're starting out with like 0.5 megawatt on their way to 7 or 8. I can't remember the exact number. But the point is they can't get everything they want. And so they're going to need to do something. Let's talk about microgrids, if you could, and also maybe just stationary power, what the opportunities are like, in that space.
Well, so starting off is every site is a bit of a unicorn. You and I talked about this once before, and it's because you might have some sites where you have access to the grid and you can pull down 10 megawatts of power, which is fantastic. You have other sites that might take 2 years in order to light it up, right? So you're going to need to look at alternative sources of power, whether that be solar, whether that be battery storage, or whether that even in some cases be solutions like mainspring that allow you to generate power on site. So there's a lot of different, and I wouldn't say that we've walked in and said, hey, we have a formula that we're deploying for all of our sites that's exactly the same. It's not. It's really going to be depending on the situation and depending on what's available power-wise on each site. I mean, our intention is to get as green as possible and be net zero across our network with all of our sites. So it's important for us to make the right decisions and also future-proof the sites to ensure that we meet those obligations.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, the reason the microgrid is a question is because, when it comes to trucking, you always hear the word uptime, right? Mm-hmm. And not only does the truck need to be up, but in the case of power, you know, your sites, other sites all need to be operating at a pretty high level, not just power level, but, uptime, as we say.
Resilience.
I mean, how do you get yourself off to a good start in that way?
So it's as I said before, you mean it's great. If we have a location that we could actually create a microgrid or do DG on site or so forth, that's great. And that we could actually create the power and power up the site. We are going to be putting solar and alternative power sources on every single site. Now, to the extent of whether it can power the entire site or not is a different question. We are implementing resilience solutions, and that's going to be part of our sort of go-to-market. This is mission critical infrastructure that's being deployed. So and you're dealing with a lot of commercial companies who need to get from point A to point B, and time is money if they're late. So we want to make sure that the infrastructure is there and available to ensure that we can service these routes and folks that have reservations on our systems and so forth. So it's very important to us that we uphold super high SLAs with most of our customers.
Yeah, and I guess I'd ask you to I think it was service level agreement. Is that what that means?
Yeah, service level agreement.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned this yourself, is that there's not this great record for electrification on the passenger car side. A lot of downtime, a lot of, sites that, you know, you pull up and, you know, they're not working or something like that. You can't really afford that.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, so our customers are going to be relying on us to ensure that they can make this electrification transition, right? So we are going to ensure that we're going to be higher than NEVI standards, which is 97% and up, and ensuring that the resilience is in place that we can support it. So it's going to be one of the pillars of our service that we're going to stand behind. And a lot of those is through my experience at EV Connect, is looking over the last 5 years and understanding I don't want to say some of the issues that have plagued the industry, so to speak, but it is sort of an ongoing problem. There's a number of different reasons why. But for us, when we're actually dealing with commercial fleets, and this is business to business, business means business. You got to be up and running, and you got to provide a service that they can count on and rely on. And that's going to be an important part of our company and our technology and then what we're deploying out there to service.
Yeah, real quick on NEVI, you want to give us that? I know the acronym, but I'd ask you to. It's state funding.
So NEVI. NEVI is from the Inflation Reduction Act, basically the money that was distributed out to a lot of the states and how they're actually distributing it to build out that nationwide network of corridor charging that Biden's been sort of campaigning for the last few years. So that's a lot of that is still work in progress. The other side with NEVI is they have had a large focus on passenger vehicles and light duty fleet. There's a lot of pushing right now to actually look at medium and heavy duty trucks. You know, you're talking about 72% of all U.S. goods are transported in the trucking industry, right? Demand's going up. The industry has lots of challenges that are going with it. It's a growing industry. The shortage of drivers. Corporations struggling with ESG. 7% of the vehicles on the road, over 20% of the pollution, and 7% of greenhouse gas emissions. So legislation needs to be in place to help push this along. And I think it's really important that medium and heavy duty trucks gets sort of their support out there in order to make this happen.
Well, very recently, we're seeing some moves in that direction now with this joint energy and Department of Transportation work. Not a lot is known yet. I think that the first focus is sort of on establishing corridors, which is sort of what you're doing too. Do you see a good overlay there? And obviously getting the federal government involved, and I don't think there was money mentioned right away, but just this idea of having some people thinking about these things along with you.
No, I think it's really important, right? I mean, this is to get a lot of the private companies to get into the space and start actually working and building out infrastructure in order to support the transition, we're going to need some federal and state support. And so it's really a collaboration between private and public that we're actually seeing out in the marketplace. So trucks are important, as I just sort of stated, right? They're impactful, both for the environment and so forth. They have a lot of changes. They have a lot of headwinds that they're actually facing. So in order to get the support for the infrastructure, it'll help a lot of the businesses like ourselves to be able to make it through building out the infrastructure for the next 2-3 years before we can actually get into driving a business for through profitability. So it's really important that it is a collaboration on and helping both of us get there for, you know, a cleaner America.
You know, we are in a political season, and I realize it's impossible to know as we talk today just what may happen. But you could see, at least at the federal level, sort of a reversal of some of this. Is that part of your planning? Do you look at those things, you know, kind of political environments as well as you work on your bill? You mentioned, for example, that, you know, there are friendlier places and there are places that have regulations that, you know, codify, I guess, some of this. California, you mentioned the Pacific Northwest, where you are speaking to us from. Those are places where, you know, you go where you're welcome, right, rather than where you're not. But I guess the question is, you know, could you see sort of the federal rug being pulled out after the election?
So the Inflation Reduction Act, all the funds of that have already been distributed to state level, and it's being redistributed at the state level. So obviously hotbeds for EV charging and so forth, like California, Oregon, Washington, Northeast and so forth, and I believe Texas Triangle will get there as well, are going to continue down the path which they've already set out. You're also looking at, there's a tipping point in the industry. And I think the tipping point, both from a passenger vehicle side as well as a truck side, is the vehicle manufacturers, once they reach that critical mass, it's going to be less expensive. And I think I saw some stats that in 2027, they believe that it's going to be less expensive to produce an electric vehicle car as opposed to a ICE combustion engine. Once we hit that tipping point and the car companies make the transition and the infrastructure is there to support it, I think this ship has sailed. And I think in a lot of cases that if the federal government changes, yes, I think that certain things will probably slow down in certain states and areas of the country. But in the ones that already have sort of policies that are friendly for this transition, I think they'll continue to drive this and stick with the commitments that they've made.
Now, you've mentioned specifically their passenger vehicles. Obviously, you know, we're focused on the medium heavy duty truck market. Does the same hold true for those vehicles, or does it take a little longer for that cost parity?
I think it'll probably take a little bit longer, but there are incentives in place in order to help that. I mean, if you look at the cost of an electric vehicle is more expensive than obviously traditional diesel. So, but there's a lot of incentives in place to help companies make that transition. There's even incentives in place for medium and small businesses in order to make the transition as well. So with help with ACF and others that like this, where they want to actually go through and transition the industry over, having incentives in place helps people with the sort of capital costs in order to get into the game and actually make the transition, which I think is really important. It's sort of something that we have to do as a society as a whole. So I think that the trucks will come, and most of the manufacturers have made commitments to actually rolling these vehicles off in mass production, and they're moving in that direction, both from a battery electric as well as hydrogen.
Now, you mentioned a couple of things that I want to circle back to. One is megawatt charging. Obviously, today we don't have any trucks out there that can charge at those rates, and yet, you know, to really make this go, you're going to need something like that eventually. I think the only thing that's really in place right now as a standard for it, which is good because sometimes those trail, you know, but, but the idea that, you know, we're going to need this, that is the ability to charge fast and charge a lot. Of course, that also draws a lot of power. Can you talk a little bit about your megawatt strategy that, you know, up in Portland, you know, Daimler has one right now, I think on site at Swan Island, but, you know, how do you see that rolling out?
So we see it as a huge part of our strategy because public infrastructure is a lot, the application of megawatt charging is going to be a lot more applicable for public infrastructure charging. As battery technology advances and longer range becomes a reality and the vehicles can actually accept megawatt charging, then this will take the charging times way down from, you know, 30, 45 minutes to get to 80%, depending on the vehicle, much down to 2015, which is going to more align with sort of traditional charge, traditional fueling models, and allow them to actually sort of change their workflows of actually doing it. And I also think that it's public infrastructure is going to play a huge role in this because the cost to get into megawatt charging, the power and infrastructure required in order to support it is going to be difficult for a lot of the private sector who are focused on other businesses like managing freight and logistics or warehouses and so forth. For them to rely on public infrastructure is going to be even more critical, especially when the megawatt charging comes out, because it's going to be a premium service.
Sure. You know, you have basically announced your first three sites, I think, and we'll talk about that for just a minute. We've got about a minute left here.
Sure. I'm super excited to announce that we're lighting up our first corridor, and it's going to be LA to Vegas. And we're opening our first location in 2024 in Colton. We're probably going to have 60 plus charging stations there that is going to be lit up to in order to support a very high traffic area that can is right at in the split of the 10 and the 215. Barstow and Baker are the other two locations that we're actually lighting up, and near to come is going to be sort of Southern Nevada as well as San Pedro area. So we're excited to announce that first corridor. I think it's going to be addressing a critical need, and obviously from a lot of the conversations we've had with our customers, they're pretty excited about actually seeing this becoming a reality.
Yeah. Last thing I'll get you out of here on this. You mentioned before three different ways that you'll sort of go to market. And will Greenlane as a brand be something that we'll see in all of those?
Yes, it will. Yes. You know, Greenlane, a lot of what we're trying to create is it's not just locations that have a Greenlane sign that you can go and charge and so forth. Is we're really seeing this as a combination of infrastructure, technology, vehicle interoperability, working with all the different vehicle OEMs to ensure that their vehicles work seamlessly on our network, as well as providing the freight and logistics companies the tool sets that they need to integrate into the systems that they currently have today. So yes, infrastructure is the main sort of go-to-market, but we're really building a technology layer that's going to pull all of this together and sort of be this connective tissue to allow their journey to electrification to be a little more complete and understand fueling costs and battery performance and telematics integration. So if they have a reservation at a location, truck, God forbid, is late, we can automatically reroute them to a different location to avoid demand charges or move them to a different lane at one of our facilities to ensure that they can still charge and get to their location on time.
So a holistic approach for sure. Well, Patrick McDonald King, thank you so much for being with us today. And thank you. And we wish you the best with Greenlane as you roll it out.
Thanks, Alan. We'll keep you posted as things move along. And I appreciate you having us on the show today.
Great. Thank you. Well, folks, you know, the Greenlane approach to what we're looking at from an infrastructure thing is so important because we heard recently that, you know, when you talk about charging opportunity stations, if you will, or chargers, you know, 60,000 for passenger cars and about 10 public chargers, you know, for heavy and medium duty trucks. So what Greenlane is doing, what all these others are doing, pretty important, I think, to get us to the point of being able to charge trucks and keep them moving. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Patrick today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.